Imagine this scenario. You are working at a GI specialty clinic at a university pediatric hospital where you see a 5-month-old girl with severe constipation. This young patient was recently diagnosed with Hirschsprung disease, a condition in which there is a lack of innervation of regions of the intestine due to defects in neural crest cell development and migration. The attending tells you, "I know this is tough, but I want you to explain to the patient's parents how this condition developed." It's good practice to explain things to family members in ways they can understand. How will you explain to the parents the underlying etiology of Hirschsprung disease? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholz, here to bring the neurology bricks to your ears. At the end of today's episode, you will have learned to 1. List the derivatives of the ectoderm. 2. Define neurulation and explain how it occurs. 3. Describe the origin, migration, and fate of neural crest cells. 4. Explain how the neural tube is organized into 3 layers. 5. Describe how the spinal cord develops from the neural tube. And 6. Describe the development of the brain, including the 5 brain vesicles, the brainstem, and the cerebral cortex. Have you ever watched how a vase or bowl is thrown on a pottery wheel? To make a vase, the ceramic artist takes clay, then forms an expanding depression in the center. The nervous system takes shape in an embryo in a similar fashion, where the tissue invaginates, or folds onto itself, to create a tube-like structure. This tube is a neural tube, which is a primordium of the brain and spinal cord. Now, this is an oversimplification, of course, and the development of the nervous system is an incredibly complex process. Listen and imagine the developmental process as I walk you through it, step by step. Part 1. How does the nervous system develop? The precursors of the major systems of the body are outlined early in fetal development. We start with the 3 germ layers, called the endoderm, mesoderm, and ectoderm, which are formed during the 3rd week of development. We'll focus on the ectoderm, from which the entire nervous system forms. That includes both the central and peripheral nervous systems. The central nervous system comprises the brain and spinal cord, whereas the peripheral nervous system is composed of the 31 pairs of spinal and 12 pairs of cranial nerves and all the ganglia. The nervous system is one of many structures formed from ectoderm. Let's review derivatives of the surface ectoderm and neuroectoderm to see how the nervous system fits into the picture. Components of your body that derive from surface ectoderm include your nails, inner and outer ears, the lens of your eye, your epidermis, the anterior pituitary, hair, teeth enamel, and the parotid gland. What derives from neuroectoderm? That includes the central nervous system's somatic motor neurons and preganglionic neurons, astrocytes, posterior pituitary, pineal gland, retina, and optic nerves, and oligodendrocytes. Okay, let's pause here to review what we've just learned. The central nervous system and peripheral nervous system derive from which embryonic germ layer? The answer is the ectoderm. Part 2. What is neurulation? Once the ectoderm is formed, the nervous system gets right to work and starts to develop that same week. Neurulation is the process of formation of the earliest neurologic structures, the neural plate, followed by the neural tube and neural crest. So remember those steps: neural plate, neural tube, then neural crest. Now chant this to yourself: plate, tube, crest. Plate, tube, crest. And you'll never forget it. Let's now work on visualizing how neurulation works. So put on your 3D imagination caps. Neurulation starts with induction signals from the underlying notochord and paraxial mesoderm, which cause the midline ectoderm to thicken into a neural plate. Further induction signals cause the neural plate to invaginate, while its edges converge and fuse dorsally to form the neural tube. As this is taking place, the ectoderm next to the lateral edges of the neural plate become the neural crest, which is then pinched off from both the ectoderm and neural tube by the end of this process. After neurotube closure, neurocrest cells migrate peripherally to form different structures, such as the spinal ganglion. The end result is that the wall of the neurotube forms the substance of the central nervous system, or more specifically, the spinal cord and brain. Its lumen forms the central canal of the spinal cord and the ventricular system in the brain. The neurocrest forms most of the peripheral nervous system, such as the spinal and cranial nerves and ganglia. The closure of that neurotube is probably your biggest first achievement in life. So let's examine this process more closely, because abnormal closure can lead to a variety of congenital anomalies. Remember that cranial means in the direction of the head, and caudal means is towards the end of the tail. Closure does not move continuously from cranial to caudal or vice versa. Instead, it begins at the halfway point on the cranial-caudal axis of the neural plate. From this midpoint, the tube sequentially closes caudally and cranially, with the most cranial and caudal aspects, the cranial and caudal neuropores, remaining open until the very last. They will ultimately close around week 4 of development in utero. This means that the neurotube is created in about 1 month. Isn't that amazing? Now, pop quiz on this important concept. In which direction does the neurotube closure progress? Neurotube closure begins in the middle of the cranial caudal axis and progresses both caudally and cranially. Part 3. What is the neurocrest? As we have seen, neurulation creates both the neurotube and neurocrest. Newly created neural crest cells differentiate into a wide variety of cells in various organ systems all over the body. Throughout your medical school years, you'll hear a lot about neural crest cells, so this is a really important concept. For many of these cells, this will involve migration away from their origin. Of particular importance, recall that the neural crest forms much of the peripheral nervous system, including somatosensory nerves, spinal or sensory and autonomic ganglia, and the postganglionic autonomic fibers. Let's put this information into medical context. Why is it important? Well, when neural crest cells fail to develop properly or fail to migrate correctly, it can cause anatomic abnormalities or specific disorders like Hirschsprung disease. In Hirschsprung disease, neurocrest cells do not correctly migrate to the colon to form nerve networks that make up the myenteric plexus. Children born with this condition have an absence of certain nerve fibers in the colon, causing the affected colon segment to not be able to relax and pass stool. Now, to see if you are paying attention, what peripheral nervous system structures are formed from the neural crest? The neural crest gives rise to the sensory portions of nerves and sensory ganglia, and to autonomic ganglia and postganglionic fibers. Part 4. What is the neural tube? After the neural crest, let's discuss the neural tube, which forms all the rest of the nervous system, aka the entire central nervous system. Soon after formation, the neurotube wall begins to thicken and form into 3 layers. The innermost layer is the ventricular layer, which is the lumen and is the source of neurons that will reside in the mantle layer. The remaining cells become ependymal cells or glial cells that will line the lumen. The middle layer is the mantle layer. This layer is composed of neuron cell bodies and becomes gray matter. Its gross anatomic color is gray because the cell bodies are not myelinated. Finally, the outermost layer is the marginal layer. This layer is composed of axons and becomes white matter. Its anatomic color is white because of the fatty myelin that surrounds axons. Quick question to test you. Which neural tube layer becomes gray matter and which becomes white matter? The mantle or middle layer becomes gray matter, composed of neural cell bodies, and the marginal or outer layer becomes white matter, composed of myelinated axons. Okay, we're now ready to consider the development of the spinal cord and brain from the neural tube. Let's start with the simpler of the two, the spinal cord. Part 5. How does the spinal cord develop? Imagine in your head what a cross-section of a fully formed spinal cord looks like. Note the key features. In the middle of the cross-section, there is a small central canal. The central interior portion is the gray matter, which sort of looks like a butterfly shape. White matter resides at the periphery of the spinal cord. And finally, spinal nerves are attached to the cord by its dorsal and ventral roots. The dorsal roots contain sensory nerves, while the ventral roots convey motor information. So how do these structures develop from the neural tube? Well, remember that we talked about the mantle layer of the neural tube, which is the middle layer? That very mantle layer eventually becomes the gray matter and grows asymmetrically so that a dorsal and a ventral mass develops on each side of the midline, creating what are called the alar and basal plates. The alar plate becomes a dorsal horn composed of sensory neurons. The basal plate becomes a ventral horn composed of motor neurons. With further development, the neural crest derives sensory neurons from the dorsal root ganglia, send their axons into the spinal cord, and thereby participate in spinal nerve formation. Let's stop here for a quick review. What are the fates of the alar and basal plates? The alar plate becomes a dorsal horn composed of sensory neurons, and the basal plate becomes a ventral horn composed of motor neurons. Part 6. How does the brain develop? Let's start with a look at the structure of the fully formed brain in order to see what the end result of development should be. Remember that the midbrain, pons, and medulla together are called the brainstem. Inside the brain, there's also the ventricular system. Formation of the brain from the cranial neural tube occurs in steps, and that first step is constriction of the tube, creating 3 primary vesicles. These are the forebrain, or prosencephalon, midbrain, or mesencephalon, and hindbrain, or rhombencephalon. The next step is for 2 of these vesicles to further constrict, creating then a total of 5 secondary vesicles. These 5 secondary vesicles, the telencephalon, diencephalon, mesencephalon, metencephalon, and myelencephalon, whew, what a mouthful! While they all give rise to all the named regions of the fully formed brain. Most importantly, remember the additional constriction in the telencephalon midline. It creates the 2 cerebral hemispheres. Each vesicle has a solid wall that gives rise to solid parts of the brain, such as specific regions like the thalamus, and it also has a lumen or cavity that gives rise to some portion of the ventricular system. Now let's focus on the development of the brain stem. The brain stem is derived from the mesencephalon, metencephalon, and myelencephalon. Essentially, it is a cranial continuation of the spinal cord and therefore shares some features with it. One of these features is that the gray matter mantle layer subdivides into the alar and basal plates. One thing that is different in the brainstem, though, is that the alar plates are pushed from a dorsal position to a lateral position. Recall that the alar plate is composed of sensory neurons, and the basal plate is composed of motor neurons. This is true in both the spinal cord and in the brainstem. In the brainstem, these plates will subdivide into cranial nerve nuclei. Remember all that pain you went through learning about brainstem nuclei? Well, this is their origin, the origin of your med school memorization pains. But here, we're going to make it simple for you. Just know that the takeaway is that the sensory cranial nerve nuclei from the alar plates will be located lateral to the motor cranial nerve nuclei, which are formed from the basal plates. All right, before we move on, let's do a quick pop quiz. What are the fates of the alar and basal plates in the brain stem? The alar plates become sensory cranial nerve nuclei, whereas the basal plates become motor cranial nerve nuclei. Okay, now we're going to move higher and higher up to the cerebral cortex. How does it form from the neural tube? Well, the cerebral hemispheres derived from the telencephalon are structurally complex. Among their many characteristic features is the presence of a peripheral layer of neurons called the cerebral cortex. Recall that early in neurotube development, the wall thickens and forms three layers: ventricular, mantle, and marginal. In the cerebral hemispheres, the outer portion of the ventricular layer is renamed the germinal matrix. It is a source of neurons that migrate through the mantle and marginal layers and gather on the periphery to create the cerebral cortex. One feature of the mature cerebral cortex surface is that it is not smooth. Instead, it is formed of invaginations, called sulci, between brainfold or gyri. This allows for increased surface area and is a way to accommodate the large number of cortical cells without requiring the cerebral hemispheres to become too large. Initially, during development, the cerebral hemisphere surface is smooth, but with cell proliferation, it gradually develops the characteristic invaginations of the fully formed brain. Now, one last question before I wrap up this section on brain development. Why doesn't the surface of the cerebral cortex stay smooth through development? The sulci that form invaginations between the brain folds allow for increased surface area as a way to accommodate the large number of cortical cells without requiring the cerebral hemispheres from becoming too large. And that's all I have today for development of the nervous system. As I wrap up this audio break episode, let's see if we've completed our goals for this lesson. First, can you describe the importance of the ectoderm? The nervous system is derived from the ectoderm. Neurulation is a process by which midline ectoderm becomes a neural tube in neural crest. Next, can you describe the importance of the neural tube in its three layers? The neural tube goes on to form the central nervous system, and the neural crest goes on to form most of the peripheral nervous system. The lumen of the neural tube forms the central canal of the spinal cord in the brain's ventricular system. The neural tube develops three layers: ventricular, mantle, or middle gray layer, and marginal, or outer white matter. Second, can you explain how the neural tube gives rise to the spinal cord? During formation of the spinal cord, the middle layer forms, thickening dorsally and ventrally, named alar and basal plates, respectively. The alar plate becomes a dorsal horn with sensory neurons, and the basal plate becomes a ventral horn with motor neurons. Finally, can you summarize the development of central nervous system structures? During brain development, the neural tube forms three primary constrictions: the prosencephalon, mesencephalon, and rhombencephalon. The primary brain vesicles undergo further constriction to create the five secondary brain vesicles, which are the telencephalon, diencephalon, mesencephalon, metencephalon, and myelencephalon, and these will form all brain and ventricular regions. During brain stem development, the alar plate takes up a lateral position and will become sensory cranial nerve nuclei, whereas the basal plate maintains its medial position and will become motor cranial nerve nuclei. Migration of cells out of the ventricular zone germinal matrix in the telencephalon forms the cerebral cortex. And that's all I have for today. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's revisit our patient from the beginning of this episode. You are working at a pediatric GI specialty clinic where you see a 5-month-old girl with severe constipation. She was recently diagnosed with Hirschsprung disease, and your attendee designates you to explain to the parents the underlying etiology of this disease. How do you explain its pathophysiology clearly, concisely, and in easy-to-understand terms? You begin by explaining that very early in the development of the nervous system, a transient structure called the neural crest is formed. The cells in the neural crest ultimately give rise to, among other structures in the body, the nerves that innervate the intestines. You say, somewhere along the way, the development and movement of the neural crest cells were impaired, and the nerves that control contraction of the muscles in the gut did not form correctly. And when there isn't appropriate contraction, stool can build up inside the colon, causing severe constipation. Based on your explanation, the parents begin to understand that their daughter's Hirschsprung disease is a congenital condition. You recommend referral to a multi-specialty team. You also appreciate the importance of understanding and explaining basic science concepts in medicine, including embryology, to patients. And that's our show for today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RxBrix experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. Happy studying, and see you next time.